Glenn Blake, the most interesting skier in the world. Well, if you didn't know it, you heard it here first. Glenn Blake is the most interesting skier in the world, and we're going to take you through a bunch of Glenn Blake stories. And this week, it's all about the celebrities Glenn has met and the unique experiences he's had. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and I am going to talk to Glenn Blake, and we are going to discuss Blakeisms, Elan skis. We'll talk about when the ski season really should start, according to Glenn. And of course, we're going to go through a lot of Glenn's unique and interesting stories. So sit back and get ready for some more Glenn Blake. So I am here with Glenn Blake, the most interesting skier in the world. And Glenn has had a ton of stories. He's met a ton of people in his career. He's traveled the world. And he mentioned to me a couple weeks ago that one story that I have to get out of him is a story relating to Glenn Blake, Sean Palmer, Coolio. There was one more in that mix, Glenn. Can you elaborate on the story? I think you spent a week with these folks. Carl Lewis was that other person. So
Carl Lewis, and actually, if you really want to be a name dropper, we can throw in Donny Osmond and and Gary Selsey. I mean, if we want to talk some race car drivers, we had Gary Selsey. We had Roger Mears with us. I mean, it was this super funny, eclectic group. We were all doing the Toyota Grand Prix down there in Long Beach. Yeah, when I saw the list, it was pretty funny. And so you go to these kind of things, and all of us are actually, wow, I just realized this. I did it. I'll tell you this one too.
Okay.
Later. Yeah, I did some inspirational speaking with Evander Holyfield years back. That was a trip. I just realized I forgot all about that until we just mentioned this. Anyways, you do these things and you just kind of do your thing and you kind of meet the people and you're cordial, and then however you end up doing it, you end up kind of hanging out with a gang, huh? You know?
Yeah.
You kind of buddy up with the different people and, you know, and you're kind of cordial to the different guys. And yeah, so for whatever reason, kind of the crew that came about this quite large group of celebrities and sports and music and acting stars, the crew, so to speak, that I started hanging out with was Palmer, of course, and then yeah, Coolio and Carl Lewis. And it was just a really funny, eclectic mix that us four would end up kind of hanging out together. And we were just playing games the whole time. And Coolio had just gotten busted for like some concealed weapon or something.
Yeah.
So me and Palmer show up with like squirt guns, you know, tucked in our belt. Well, yo, Coolio, man, I know you're having some problems, man, but, you know, we got you. And he looks at us, he's like, you guys, don't even joke around about that stuff. You know, you guys, you know, you're going to get me in trouble. Don't even joke about that. You know, let's face it, we're all humans. We're all very genuine in our ways when it gets down to it, I think. And Carl, poor Carl, every time and I don't know why we all hung out, but it was like, come on, man, let's go get something to eat. You know, so we'd walk down the street and eat whatever. Come on, we'll go over here. You know, see you in the morning for coffee. Or, yeah, all right, cool. You know, and poor Carl, every time we saw him, it was like, you know, you're standing, you know, on the side of the road waiting for the light to turn green, you know, seeing walk across the street. You're like, and that light goes green, dude. It's on. Like, you may have won, you know, 6 or 7 gold medals, but I don't ever remember racing you. We're just railing him the whole time.
Did he take the bait? Did he race you guys?
Oh, yeah. No. It was really great because he really actually opened up to us and told us about what it took to get to that level of athletic superiority and how he doesn't have that skill in his life. And he went so far. He goes, if I took off one right now, I'd snap tendons right and left. I mean, you'd hear him pop. I wouldn't know how to run other than the technique that I knew how to run at that level. And the only reason I could run that way was because I had risen to that level.
Huh.
It was very interesting to listen to him say. He goes, I'm not at that level anymore, but my technique. And you kind of see it like someone that might have been a great skier but hasn't skied for 4 or 5 years. He's going to go out and try to ski the way he skied the last time.
Yep.
Technically, he's there, but physically, he's not.
Yep.
And that was exactly, it was pretty funny. We had some hilarious, hilarious conversations about automobiles and cars that we owned and cars that we had. And yeah, Coolio's battery was broken in his Viper or something, and his wife was driving. He gets this phone call, and it's like, the battery's dead, you know? They're going to tow the car because the battery's on and on and on. And it was just great to be around these guys. I mean, here you are, this musician that's doing his thing. You had Palmer, athlete, doing his thing. You had myself doing our thing, and then to be in the greatness of Carl. Now, since then, I've seen Carl a couple of different times. His sister, I think, became a bobsled pusher.
Okay.
She was also track and field background. And it was really funny. We were actually doing a television show, and you don't just go up and get interviews with Carl Lewis and these different people. And I did. I walked around, hey, Carl, what's up, man? Hey, you want to race? You know, all these people are like, what a jerk. Hey, Carl, man, you want to race, dude? Come on, man, let's race. You know, yelling over this crowd. And he immediately looked back and went, Plank, what are you doing? Who else would be yelling that over the crowd of people to Carl Lewis?
Man, if I ever meet an athlete like that, that's what I'm going to start yelling. Any Olympian, you want to race?
Yeah, it's like that stupid call-out thing in a way, I guess. You know, what do they call it?
The pro call-out?
Oh, gosh. I make people cry when people call me out. Dude, I won't take it. For Carl and stuff, it's funny, but when they did the pro call out, I hurt people, actually. I've had them like, come on, man, I was just kidding. So you want to come out? Come on, man, let's do this right now. I didn't see you in Chamonix yesterday. Let's go right now. Come on, get your buddy. Let's go. They're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because they usually call you out in a lift line or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, we've had some fun with it. But, anyways, that was a funny week. And so that reminded me that, yeah, I got invited to the Chrysler Corporation to speak on one of these goal things. And it was all through No Fear at the time.
Okay.
Darned if it ends up being me and Knaus, who was a wheelchair racer, and Evander Holyfield, and one of the Simo brothers, which were, you know, they were racing NASCAR at the time.
Is this pre-biting the ear or post-biting the ear?
I'm trying to remember if it was just, he had just gotten beat of all things. No, but it wasn't the ear biting, no. It was literally weeks after he had gotten beat. He went back on to win again. He did lose, I want to say, maybe it was one of the Buster fights, if I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Anyways, that was an interesting deal. He was really a funny guy to talk to because obviously, he had his attaché with him, this guy named Charlie that kind of, he was his handler,
okay.
Basically. It was Evander, but then he realized that none of us cared. It was like, look, you want to be one of the boys or not? Because otherwise, this is going to be a tough couple of days. Like, we know you're Evander. It's insane. That's amazing. That's awesome. But, you know, whatever, dude. We're just here to hang out.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he, like, just completely opened up. And it was really, really, that was a really unique opportunity to be around somebody like that. Dude, he got right in my face one time and, like, you know, like, right in my face because we were talking and he was talking about, if you watch the, and I don't box, he was just talking about neck movements and, like, seeing people's veins pop and seeing tendons move on the neck. And that would tell you where the punch was coming from and that if you saw too late, you were knocked out.
That's cool.
He looked in your face and got like 2 inches away from me and like explained it. All of a sudden I was just like, yeah, okay, that's good enough. But he was like watching ears move and watching wrinkles in your skin move.
That's wild. I mean, I guess.
Or the where and when the punch was coming. It was trippy, actually. It was really funny because in the middle, he did this big speech in front of a couple thousand people at the Chrysler Corporation because it was all part of this platform building. They had just designed this little car. And anyways, he couldn't say, and now to this day, I can't say it, but he couldn't say peripheral.
Okay.
He mispronounced it. And knew he mispronounced it, so he said it like a different way. And it was also wrong. And then he said it like a third time, like parenthial. Parenthial vision. We kind of joked about it once, the way you would joke to somebody, but we didn't write it at all because it was Andrew.
Yeah.
Like, so when you're boxing, you use that parenthial vision. He like looked at us, at that time we already knew him and he was pretty cool, but he looked at us like, don't say it again. But he was a very interesting man. Wow. And obviously an incredibly talented athlete. They took us out to the test track, and it was right when the Dodge Viper had come out. And so obviously they drove us all around the test track, and they told us, like, okay, you can go 55 miles an hour here, you can go 60 miles an hour here, you can go, you know, and you can drive whatever. So they're driving us around this little van. They finally pull in, and every vehicle that they made was sitting at the test track, whether it was a pickup truck or a car or, you know, whatever. Everything there. It's a courtesy day at the track. Mm-hmm. There was one Viper there, you know. Everybody's like running, and I missed that. And someone else was running over to, you know, the whatever the heck it was. At the time, there was a couple of Stealths there. And so we grabbed the Stealths, and we're all sitting there like ready to go, engines running. And we look, and Evander was like slowly walking to a convertible LeBaron. The most mundane, dumbest car there. We were talking to him about his cars. He's like, yeah, I got a Maserati guy. You know, this guy gave me a Maserati. No, Lamborghini. I got a Lamborghini. That's what he had. I go, you like driving that Lamborghini around? No, too much glass. I hate that Lamborghini. It was just so funny talking to somebody with that caliber. Oh, my gosh. Anyways, he's slowly walking to that LeBaron. We're all driving around this track like, rah, rah, rah. And he's doing like 50 with the top down.
With the top down.
We're blowing by him. Anyway, the day ends. They had just come out with this Dodge Neon.
Okay.
And all of us end up in the Neon. All of us. As in five people in the Neon. We had Simo driving, and they had one high-banked corner on the track, you know, and he was the professional race car driver. We were getting it up to 90 miles an hour and, like, drifting it into the high-banked turn, and we kept trying to go 100, but we never could. You know, we're all leaning forward. And this poor little car is hurting. I mean, there's five people in it, and it's sliding sideways, and it's got somebody who knows what to do with the wheel at the wheel. Yep. And this thing growling for everything, and we're laughing at the top of our lungs, and you could see Evander, he wasn't happy at all. Like, he was like, how did I get in this situation, and I can't get myself out of this situation, so Charlie, you get me out of this situation. And that was his attaché. To this day, dude, we always joke, because he literally introduced him. He was like, yeah, this is, my name's Evander, it's a pleasure to meet you, this is Charlie, my attaché. Anyways, you could see Evander squeezing Charlie's leg, and all of a sudden Charlie said, I think we should stop. Even though he was laughing at the top of his lungs. That's funny. We pulled back into the parking lot, and at the time, Bob Lutz was the president of them, and he's like this famous car. He's the guru of all car owners, basically.
Okay.
Bob Lutz, you might be able to look him up. He's an absolute genius in the car industry, for better or for worse. And our comment was, well, it passed the five drunk high schooler test. And the classic corporate answer, he says, it's interesting you say that. We did receive word several weeks ago that the vehicle was involved in an accident involving some teenagers, all of which were safe due to the corporate answer. It was funny. Gosh, those are funny memories. Forgot all about it until you mentioned it.
There has to be a lot of celebrity experiences within your career, because there are a lot of those celebrity ski events. And do you end up getting invited to those?
Not so much. A couple of times. I mean, if I wanted to, I could certainly get on the circuit.
Sure.
I've certainly enjoyed those times, and I've been in the situation. And because of the diversity that I have, I spent 2 weeks in, I did get on that circuit 1 year after ski season in Australia and New Zealand, ended up on this like celebrity charity tour. And that was a trip. We were doing tennis and golf and sailing, and it was definitely a fun ride. And yeah, that was a trip too, because I mean, whatever, I'm not that overly into it, and I feel like a name dropper there. But I did spend a couple of good weeks with Vince Neil and the Nelson brothers. Spent a lot of time with Meatloaf, got to see him do what he does.
He'll do anything for love.
There's a dedicated dude right there. Robert Patrick, right when Terminator 2 had just come out. So fortunately, I've been able to see him in relaxed environment, kind of being themselves. And I think there's a time where something clicks where, you know, everybody says, okay, we're either here going to have some fun or you want to be a pompous a-hole. Well, then that's your decision. The rest of us are going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Ski-wise, obviously spent a lot of time at Mammoth. We've got a lot of entertainers that come up during the holiday season, and I've got a good time ski-related. So I just met Seal a couple of years ago.
Okay. Would you meet him with Stump?
No, I met him at Mammoth, and it was funny because obviously our careers have a kindred spirit there, huh?
Yeah.
Being in all the Stump films and everything, but I had never actually met Seal, and it was great. I mean, we looked right at each other, and he's like, it's nice to meet you. And I was like, it's nice to meet you, too. And I did finally ask him, I said, so were you aware of what was going on? I mean, did you know, or were you in this ski movie? Did you not know you were in these... Because a lot of people know you from, and he goes, yeah, it's really funny. He goes, you know, early in my career, things were going on and doing these things. And he goes, I ended up going up to Whistler, you know, on some ski holidays. And he goes, and I went to Europe a bunch of times too. He goes, I kind of started snowboarding. I liked snowboarding. And he goes, and the darndest thing was, no matter where I went in snow country, everybody knew my music. And I could never figure it out because I had only made this one album. And he goes, and yet when I'd go to snow country, everybody knew my music and who I was. He goes, it wasn't until years later that I found out about your films and that my music was in your films. And I go, that's funny. Yeah. He was very, very genuine about the music and contribution that the music, you know, had to his career, or the, let's say, the audience that ultimately was listening to Seal. That was kind of a trip.
Yeah. And I would say before music got really corporate, a lot of bands were found through skiing and snowboarding, just being in those films. The editors were grabbing the music. There weren't really licensing issues back in the day. You'd grab them, put them in your film. It became part of ski and snowboard culture, and people could think back to a film part and put a song to it, and it just created a mood based on that song. So it did help grow people. Who have you gone skiing with? Who have you taken out and showed around mountains that you really thought were cool people? Because name dropping and meeting people, I know that's not your style.
Yeah.
But there's some people that you've met, I'm sure, that you really thought were good people.
I have to say Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, that's the most obvious. I've skied with him several different times. Once when he was the governor, and since he's been the governor. And I think that was a funny deal because while he was governor, obviously he had a pretty big security detail around him. And we were skiing a little bit, and it was the last run. He was supposed to go back to meet a helicopter that was going to pick him up. And he made a turn. It was one of those deals where turn there, and it's going to take you to the other side of the ski area, and you're going to end up two or three chairlifts away from where you're supposed to be.
Yep.
And that's the turn he made. And I had said, you know, have at it, man. You know, these guys have been kind of all over us. We were doing some filming for the state of California. I go, just have a fun run, dude, man. I'm right behind you. Don't worry about it. And he takes off, and he takes this turn. And all of a sudden, the two of us are just standing at the bottom of the lift together going, where'd everybody go? Or he goes, where'd everybody else go? And I was like, yeah, definitely ditched them. We're kind of on our own now, man. He's like, how long is it going to take me to get back to where I'm supposed to be? I'm like, more than 10 or 15 minutes. He's like, yeah, okay, well, let's go. He was really funny. That was really funny.
I know you're probably not starstruck by many people because you are Clint Blake and you just don't seem like a dude who's starstruck by people. But is there anyone that you knew you were going to meet that you actually were thinking about a couple days before? Like, whoa, I'm pretty psyched to meet this person. And maybe not nervous to meet them, but excited because they were someone that you were stoked on.
I think you'd have to go back to that Evander thing, knowing that I was going to meet him. That was pretty trippy.
I was hoping you were going to say Vince Neil because you mentioned him earlier.
No, that was an accident. I literally was like staying at this hotel and someone saw that I was there and they were asking me if I wasn't doing anything in the next week or two. And I was like, no. Why? What's going on? And they said, oh, we've got this celebrity fundraiser thing going on. And if, yeah, we got room. We'd love to have you along. And away I went.
Did you ever see any celebrity meltdowns or any just requests where you're like, who does this guy think he is?
I will tell you one of the coolest celebrity things that I've witnessed, actually. And again, just stumbling along, you know, you're sitting at, say, Mammoth, we got a lot of people, and someone will say, hey, stupid me, man. Gwen used to come up. She comes up every year. buddy of mine introduces me. Hey, Glenn, have you ever met Gwen? I'm like, no. Hi, Gwen. How you doing? You having fun up here skiing? Yeah, that's cool. All right. Hey, you know, happy holidays to you. Great.
Wait, Gwen Stefani?
Back to my French fries.
Yeah.
I ski with my buddy the next day. I'm like, that was Gwen, huh? He's like, yeah. Like, I thought that was her. Didn't realize it. One of the coolest things I've ever seen, I've done a bunch of celebrity racing, like I said, but not as the celebrity, as the racer, especially down in Mexico. And I did quite a few Baja 1000s as a assistant driver to the celebrity.
Okay.
We'd get them ready to go, teach them what they needed to do, get things going. And some of those celebrities, in fact, were race car drivers. You know, we were teamed up with somebody from a different discipline or something. I was actually teamed up with an F1 driver. But anyways, one of the guys on the team was Patrick Dempsey.
Okay.
I have to say this because totally the opposite of what you were saying is, so he was scheduled to be in the race car and he got a list of this is what you're supposed to do. And racing in Mexico is always sketchy. Lack of communication, lack of the car showing up. I mean, you don't know how many times I've been sitting down in Mexico waiting for a race car to show up that in fact never did show up. And 30 something hours later, you go, well, I guess we're not racing. Load up and go home. And then you find out that, yeah, the car got hit or wrecked or something broke. And nowadays communication's a little more obvious. Even so, it's still sketchy at best when you're racing the big point-to-point off-road races. Anyways, we had it set up so that he was going to get in the car and drive the car the last 150 miles to the finish line. And so there's this little town, San Vicente, down in Baja. Just a little nowhere farming town, okay? There's no buses. There's nothing. This is not like trying to go somewhere in Seattle or something to a neighborhood or something.
Right.
And we had gotten word that Patrick had not made it. He knew the information, but he had not made contact. Nobody had really heard from him, this and that. He did not make the pre-race meeting because there was some weather concerns. He was filming in Chicago or something like this. I don't know the exact details.
Okay.
The reality is, here's a celebrity that was stopped in wherever it was, Chicago, Atlanta, for weather issues. Okay?
Okay.
He was running some 30 hours late. Again, he did not make the pre-race meetings. He did not make any of the other meetings. He did make training the week or so before. He's en route. He lands in Los Angeles. It's a long way away from Mexico.
Yep.
Somehow or other gets a flight to San Diego or gets diverted to San Diego. I don't even know the details exactly on that one. But he ends up getting in a taxi in San Diego, going to Brown's Field, of all places, which is a little tiny kind of private airport over on the other side of the Tijuana border.
Okay.
He ends up walking across the border, at which point he grabs a taxi, tells the taxi where he needs to be, and this is all taking place at probably 1 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
The taxi drives him almost 3 hours, probably 4 hours accurately, to San Vicente, to a small dirt road with a mile marker on the highway, at which they pull down and go another mile or so, where they find the pit where the transfer is going to take place. The car arrives, and he's standing there ready to get in it to drive it to the finish line.
Huh.
The car had suffered 3 transmission changes and was running 5 or 6 hours or maybe even later, okay? He got in the car, drove to the finish line, and was the last official finisher of the Baja 500 that year.
Huh.
Thought that was pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, man.
I was like, could have easily just gone, yeah, whatever. I'm supposed to be down there, but so what? It just shows you how real human he was. He got invited to do this thing. He wanted to do this thing, and he did everything in his means and ability to get there and got there. We couldn't believe it because we were like, has anybody heard anything? No, you're probably going to just drive the car in yourself. Don't worry about it. There's no way. Nobody's heard from him. Nobody's seen from him. Reality is at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning, he pulls into the pit and gets out of a Tijuana taxi and says, I'm here. Is the car here? I don't know why I told that. It's kind of had an effect on me that someone had that dedication because I've been there myself. I've been there changing transmissions, and I've been the last official finisher of the Baja 500. And just to see a celebrity, he could have blown that whole thing off, had his attaché just go, he wouldn't even have sent a message. He would just, you know, nobody would have even cared because he's a celebrity and he would have gotten away with that.
Yep.
Instead, he did everything within his power to get there, and he got there. It was cool. We spent a lot of time after the race. He's a skier, and we were chatting and had a good chime, and I told him how proud I was that he did what he did to get there, and what a funny story.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like if you were to think about it and ask yourself, if you're in his shoes, what would Plake do? You would do exactly what he did.
Exactly the thing. I'm lucky because I'm a celebrity that's known for being who I am and what I am. It must be difficult to be a celebrity that's known for not who you are or not what you are, especially in the actors or maybe the band members or, you know, some of these other celebrities. I mean, race car celebrity or something like that, you know, but, you know, some of the sports celebrities are. But even that, some of the sports celebrities, you know, because they might be associated with a team or they might be. But anyway, I do feel for some of the true celebrities that are known for not who they are or what they are.
It's an interesting way to think of that.
But, yeah, most of them are pretty nice and blah, blah, blah. Shoulders with the big wigs.
Shoulders with the big wigs, and that's Talking Celebrities with the most interesting skier in the world, Glenn Plake. All right, so Glenn Plake is the most interesting skier in the world.